Blog Talk Radio.
Children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfills my need. A lonely place to be. So I learned to depend on me. To me, I found the way, the love of all inside of me, the greatest love of all. It is all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. I decided long ago never to walk.
Welcome alive to Men and Women of Honor Radio on Tribe of Family Channel, hosted by yours truly, Beverly Black, with guest speaker Harold Michael Harvey, honoring C.T. Vivian. And for those of you who don't know, we will tell you, C.T. Vivian was a close associate of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and a prominent leader in the nonviolent struggle for racial justice. 60 years after his arrest back in May of this year in Jackson, Mississippi, during the Freedom Rides, Wednesday, speaking back in May of this year, was named for the late Reverend C.T. Vivian. They named a museum for him. Jackson officials read the proclamation and hosted a ceremony at the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum to make the day official. The story of how the Freedom Riders revolutionized American travel and transit took place 60 years ago. It is noted that it's important that as we talk about our history, we owe our children not only Black history, but correct history. It was spoken at the ceremony. As we look at some of the people who played significant roles but may not have received the notoriety as people like the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., C.T. Vivian was instrumental in not only the work and efforts that Dr. King was engaged in, but his work is still relevant today. Now, our guest has a book that we will be discussing entitled My C.T. Vivian Story, A Powerful Flame That Burned Brightly. Our guest, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, is an American award-winning journalist, former lawyer, political pundit, novelist, essayist, and publisher. He earned a degree in political science from Tuskegee Institute and a Juris Doctorate degree from Atlanta Law School. Harvey was honored for outstanding work in newspaper journalism in 1976 by the National Newspaper Publishers Association. Ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel's Men and Women of Honor, it is my esteemed pleasure to welcome Mr. Harold Michael Harvey. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing well today, ma'am. I am humbled by that introduction.
I'm humbled by your presence to our platform, and I want to thank you on behalf of Tribe Family Channel and our producers for sponsoring this episode, and we learned that your sponsorship may be extended into December, ladies and gentlemen, so it is an honor to speak with you this evening. Let me invite our listeners who would like to listen online. You can visit our studio at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. Gumbo for the Soul International is our home on the web. Tribe Family Channel and Gumbo for the Soul are family. We also invite you to call in at 515-605-9351. Now, we're going to break this show into segments, and we want you, through your writings of A Powerful Flame That Burned Brightly, proceeded with my C.T. Vivian story, A Powerful Flame That Burned Brightly by Harold Michael Harvey, and you can get that at haroldmichaelharvey.com. We want to walk through in segments. We want to discuss the earlier years of your knowledge of C.T. Vivian and move forward as he travailed through his civil rights journey, and as you witness that journey and how it aligns with your thinking and your book. So start with the early C.T. Vivian. What is your earliest knowledge of him, and how did you come by it?
My earliest knowledge would be watching him on the CBS Evening News in 1965, taking that punch to the jaw from Sheriff Clark. I watched that, and I wondered who was that brave and courageous man who was speaking rapid fire before the sheriff punched him. That's how he came to my attention. In fact, that's how my book began, on him. Let me read the first sentence, and then I'm ready for the second question. I first became aware of C.T. Vivian February 19, 1965, on the CBS Evening News. Dallas County Sheriff Jim Clark sucker punched him after Vivian told Sheriff Clark that he thought he was as big a racist as Hitler. In the next breath, Vivian told Clark that he was not as big a racist as Hitler. I was 14 years old, perplexed by Jim Crow, and worried that blacks, including myself, would never be free in America. A never-dying Jim Crow-ism was the daunting thought of my youth. 2 days later, February the 21st, 1965, I would meet Malcolm X via a news break during a Boston Celtics basketball game that announced Malcolm's death in the Audubon Ballroom in Harlem. I was bewildered. A freedom fighter whose life force I did not know had died, and another one received a punch to the jaw, exercising his constitutional right of expression on a courthouse step. So that's how we began my C.T. Vivian story. And it's just ironic that you would pose a question. When and under what circumstances did you become aware of C.T. Vivian? I was 14 years old watching the news and saw that encounter. Somebody I wanted to meet. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that I would actually meet him. And never thought that we would become neighbors, and you know, neighbors who visited in one another's homes and you know, shared meals and conversations on a regular basis.
Well, in 65, I was 6, and you know, I didn't know a lot about him as I read earlier. A lot of the civil rights icons that gave such immeasurable sacrifices were overshadowed because of the reverence given to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And so when people are either pursuing Dr. King or not wanting Dr. King around because he was so effective, that there were so many others that were very effective, but they weren't cast in the news and in the media. And of course, they weren't from a legacy of a legacy of reverend and the civil rights history in that regard. Speaking of such people that are also out of Mississippi, such as C.T. Vivian's honor that was previously read coming out of Montgomery Freedom Rides Museum, and then the honors from where the bus boarded in Jackson, Mississippi, and where he and other freedom riders were arrested. There's a man that came out of Mississippi. He lived and died in Mississippi, and he didn't get the coverage that Dr. King, you know, his whole sacrifice was overshadowed because, of course, the news is driven by the media, and if you're not getting the coverage, you're just not getting the coverage. They would rather all of us black people go sit down and be quiet, but that wasn't the case. And the man that I'm speaking of that I have a sense of closeness with in terms of his family and the people that he trained, who I've spent a lot of time with on Tribe Family Channel, and that would be Megger Wiley-Evers.
Right.
Highly overlooked, and he lived and died for Mississippi, for black people, and in Mississippi. So when you talk about
in his driveway.
Oh, definitely. In his driveway, children and wife running outside. He drug himself around from his car to try to get to the side door because, you know, the car, how carports are made, and then you have a door that you can go through. But I could talk about Megger Evers until the cows come home. I once managed the leader of the Tootaloo Nine, who was led, trained, and mentored by the great late Megger Wiley-Evers, and that would be Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, Jr., the leader of the Tootaloo Nine. We've had many shows here on Voices of Wisdom. But that's the life of not only Megger Wiley-Evers, but as we can see, Mr. C.T. Vivian was overshadowed in a sense like the aforementioned, because Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was revered so highly and his message was so effective and his legacy is so rife and deep. That doesn't negate the C.T. Vivians and the Megger Wiley-Evers and the others that have sacrificed. So you mentioned Malcolm X, and I could go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about Malcolm X ties to historians that were chosen by the late, great Betty Shabazz, and conversations right here again, ladies and gentlemen, on Tribe Family Channel. So historically, I feel like I have a few chops. Now, I would need you to expound a lot more for me about C.T. Vivian and what you were feeling right there during that moment. As a 14-year-old, you're seeing black heroes being taken down. C.T. Vivian clocked across the chin. Malcolm X shot dead. You're 14. These men are kings in the line of where you're growing up to be. And how does that impact a young black male's mind?
Well, you know, I guess the immediate response is bewilderment. You don't know what to do. But then once you collect yourself, you know, at least for me, I knew that I had to set sail on a revolutionary path, that I had to follow in those footsteps of men like Vivian and Malcolm, because they would not have received the resistance that they did if their course had not been true and had not carried the weight of where our community needed to be and should be. So, you know, after getting over the anguish and the bewilderment, you know, I knew what I needed to do in my life, and that was to try to find a way to bring my community through that Jim Crow era. And you know, King's struggle, or the civil rights struggle, I mean, as I learned from Reverend Vivian, was it wasn't the end all be all of that activity was not to gain integration, but it was simply to have the country say that every right that the Constitution provides for white people, it also provides those rights for black people. And so therefore our schools and other institutions didn't necessarily have to become integrated in order for us to receive that equality. But the system has sort of watered down that movement for freedom. You know, I talk, if you notice in this passage, about Vivian working along with King and others to scale the mountain. And so when we get to April the 4th, 1968, Martin said, and I say Martin because I've had so many, I don't say it in disrespect. I do it without knowing it because I spent so much time with Dr. Vivian that he refers to Dr. King as Martin because Dr. King was his friend. He called
right,
him Martin
right. So the familiarity.
Said it.
Right.
It just rolled out
by
Mr. Professor.
Well,
I didn't mean to do
and
it.
How would it sound? Well, we understand that. But how would it sound if you're speaking with Mr. Vivian and he's saying Martin and you keep going back to Dr. King and, you know, okay, you know, you become so familiar that you know Dr. Martin Luther King, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. vicariously through C.T. Vivian, so you become, out of familiarity, someone that would call him Martin. I want to go back to something you said before you expound about Dr. King further. My train of thought, but the sacrifices that men like Malcolm, Martin, Medgar, heroes that were gunned down, Huey, Eldridge, and I don't say first names with disrespect either, but I know Bobby Seale. So I don't say that with disrespect. But they gunned down leaders. They're not concerned with running down leaders that aren't getting the attention and the minds of the masses, because that's what they have to keep a grip on to keep their agenda perpetuating forward. And Magger was getting the minds of all of Mississippi. He was the secretary for the NAACP. In all, and his territory was all of Mississippi, sharecroppers. Megger would go out there in the fields to talk to the sharecroppers, dressed like sharecroppers. He got them to trust and believe. He started out signing up memberships for the NAACP, but once he got out there and saw how they were living, see, Megger coming back from the Army, he's been all around the world. So I'm expounding on Megger Wiley Evers, the late, great Megger Wiley Evers, because he was effective. And that's why they laid in the dark and gunned him down in his driveway. You see, they would have never gunned down Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. if he wasn't effective. And people, few know that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X were about to merge and unite, because when Malcolm came back from Mecca, he had a different perspective on the Nation of Islam and the brothers of a lighter persuasion. His mind was opened and empowered, and the late, great Coretta Scott King, she softened her husband's heart in terms of believing whether or not Malcolm was truly ready to have a discussion on that level. So that's another thing that was on the onset of coming together and happening for the liberation of our people. And it just would have been a phenomenal union of minds. That would have been the catalyst of being able to think differently, but unite on one accord. And that's why we're so divided and continue to be to this day. So back to honoring C.T. Vivian, and you were going to expound about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and you call him Martin. It's natural because of you knowing him so familiar vicariously through the Vivian. So what were you going to say about that?
Well, on April the 4th, Dr. King told us that he had been to the mountaintop. Okay. Mm. And he said he had seen, he looked over and he saw the promised land, and that we as a people would get to the promised land. So they didn't know if he would get there, but he knew that we as a people would. And so so the next night he's removed from the scene. And what follows is that through the vacuum of leadership and the leadership that emerges, it somehow black people got the notion that the promised land was on top of the mountain, that because Martin had scaled the mountain, that's where the promise was, and that the higher you went up in this system of things, the more material things and wealth that you accumulated, that was success. That was what the struggle was about. But
that is not what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. meant.
No, the promised land is in the valley. So once you scale the mountain, once you overcome all the obstacles of getting on top of the mountain, you got to go down the other side to get down in the valley where that place is that God said he has for you. So we've been stuck up here on this mountain since 1968 thinking that we have arrived because we're on top of the mountain with Martin.
Now stop right there because, excuse me, you brought up God. And ladies and gentlemen, you tuned in to Men and Women of Honor Radio Live on Tribe Family Channel. I'm your host, Beverly Black. I'm the creator of Tribe Family Channel, which is a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand. My guest, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, honoring C.T. Vivian. C.T. Vivian worked alongside Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a civil rights icon in his own right. Now, let he who has an ear hear, because Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he knew he had the death threats, okay? We're going to be real right here. Herbert Hoover, the director of the FBI back then, ordered it. They had calls coming to Martin telling him he may as well commit suicide. They were harassing Coretta Scott King, calling in, talking about promiscuity and infidelity. So the smear campaign, the threats, the death threats, the survey details coming from everywhere, sabotage packages, you know, mail intercepts, wiretaps, all kinds of stuff, harassment. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. knew that his time was coming, and he prayed with much supplication. So when he says, "I've been to the mountaintop," he is spiritually speaking in terms of he has walked with God. I may not get there with you, see, to the promised land, to the success of why I'm doing what I'm doing, to when we get to that point where all people, regardless of what, our race, skin color, nationality, you know, religion, can be one. So he's speaking from a spiritual sense because he knew his time was short, and he was informing his people because we never know the day, the time, or the hour. But you could see the trepidation in his, when you watch that speech and you watch that man, and if you're deep into your history like we are, then you can start to understand and put it together from a spiritual sense. So I was glad that you brought up God, because I, my own personal belief was that that was a spiritual speech. And it's been materialized. See, we have to dumb it down and sabotage it and marginalize it and put it in physical terms, because we're dealing with sheep. See, if you want to keep leading sheep to slaughter, okay, dangle something in front of them and sabotage what they're working with. Every time they find a way out the gate, build another fence. See, so, but go ahead further on with Martin, as you are most familiar with him.
Well, I think that night he wanted us to know that we still had to go, had to scale back down the mountain on the other side, and that that reward that had been promised was in the valley. And I think as a people, we need to go back to April the 3rd, 1968, and really dig into and appreciate That's by Martin. And then going forward, we have to then, going forward, we have to say whatever happened on April 4th didn't happen, because we got to march on and get on down to the valley where the promise, where the promised land really is. It's not, you know, eating high off the hog up here on the mountain. I mean, if you think this is good living, just try to get down there in the valley, because that's where it's at. You know, so I think Reverend Vivian, Dr. Vivian, helped me to understand that and appreciate that. You know, always troubled me. I saw the community on track to do great things and really to become free, and I saw a little deviation from that. After April the 4th, 1968, and when I came into contact with Dr. Vivian in the early 1990s, and we began these series of conversations, you know, he sort of helped me over the course of my relationship with him to understand what really happened and why we don't seem to be making any progress. Because when you pick up the newspaper tomorrow, or pick up your internet news feed tomorrow, you will see that we are the same issues we were fighting in the 1960s and the 1970s. We're still fighting those same issues. You know, so why is that? If
if Martin took us to the mountaintop, and so you know, all of a sudden we're, you know, made a part of a society now. You know, but so so that sort of a little aside. But I meet, if you want to go further, you know, I can tell you about meeting when I finally got a chance to meet Dr. Vivian.
Before you segue, because definitely I want you to expound on that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. But what I would like to say before we bookend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is that I would like for our listeners to take the time to search on, you can actually go on the internet, you can go on YouTube, and you can find Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech from 1967. He was at Stanford University. I grew up a stone's throw from Stanford. And the title of the speech is Where Do We Go From Here? There's a book, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Where Do We Go From Here is the question.
Chaos.
And that was one of his last speeches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, the subtitle of that book was Chaos or Community.
Oh, yes. Ooh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you're right. See, you got to be deep in your history. You can come back on somebody and say, hey, let's break it all the way down. Where do we go from here? Chaos or community? And you are so, so right. So that's what I just want to recommend. While you're saying, you know, go back to the speech he delivered on Washington, I Have a Dream. Also, do not negate this man's writings and speeches. And we were so blessed to have Dr. Claiborne Carson on Voices of Wisdom here on Tribe Family Channel. Dr. Claiborne Carson is the executive director of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Library at called him one day. I was expecting to leave a voicemail. He doesn't usually answer that phone. So what does that tell you? So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back after this plug from our sponsor and our guest speaker, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, acclaimed American award-winning journalist, political scientist or political science degree, juris doctorate degree, just an outstanding steward of civil rights. We'll be right back after this.
This holiday season, show your loved ones how much Black lives matter. Give them the gifts that reveal the real history and culture of living Black. Give them books that inspire, motivate, and inform. Give the gift of the written words from the living now bronze medal winner, Harold Michael Harvey. Give them the Harold Michael Harvey Collection, which includes My C.T. Vivian Story, The Duke of 18th and Vine, Freaknik Lawyer, and Justice in the Round. Order some or the entire collection now to ensure delivery before the holidays at HaroldMichaelHarvey.com.
Thank you for tuning in. We're back live on Men and Women of Honor. I'm talking too fast. I'm trying to get to the guest because he's going to tell us and drop some gems on us. But now, C.T. Vivian was a freedom rider. The exact number of surviving freedom riders is hard to know. Two of the most prominent freedom riders, Congressman John Lewis and Reverend C.T. Vivian, passed away last year on July 17th. One of the freedom riders, Joyce Ladner, has an affiliation with the Tougaloo Nine. She was one of the protesters when they went to jail, and I had the pleasure of publishing her aunt's book and her life story from Mississippi, in which Alex Haley told her to finish her book because it sounds like it started where roots ended. So, C.T. Vivian, you met him, you knew him, how you broke bread with him, you visited each other, and you had deep, enlightening discussions that sparked the brain. Open up the windows of your mind and let us in. Explain, Vivian.
Well, let's go back to the Freedom Riders. Vivian was not an original Freedom Rider. Vivian was living and working in Nashville, Tennessee. He trained John Lewis and many of the Freedom Riders. So when the Freedom Riders set sail for New Orleans, get on the bus, when they get to Anniston, Alabama, the Klan come and pull them off the bus and burn the bus and beat the Freedom Riders, John Lewis being one of them. And so the next day, that was this big question, this whether or not the Freedom Rise would continue. And so this tells you what type of man C.T. Vivian was. C.T. Vivian left Nashville, drove down to Anniston, Alabama, and got with Lewis and the other Freedom Riders who had been beaten the day before, and said, if you're willing to continue this trip, it's so important that we make this statement that we can get on this bus and ride across country. I'll get on the bus with you.
Okay? Oh, wow.
He got on the bus knowing that that was dangerous because they had just burned the bus. So he didn't set sail with great expectation that we're going to leave Tennessee and get on down to New Orleans and everything is going to be hunky-dory. He ran to the fight, to the danger, and said, if you're willing to continue. Now, he was much older than these guys. They were younger. Vivian was older. So he's coming in as this seasoned elder statesman to these young college students and saying, if you've got the courage to get back on a bus, I'll get on that bus and ride with you. So that's how Vivian gets on the Freedom Riders bus. Originally, all he did was to prepare them for nonviolent resistance and encourage them to take the trip. And when the violence started, he drove down to Anniston and got on the bus with them and completed the journey. And they got arrested, I know in Mississippi, but because Bernard Lafayette told me one day about when they got arrested as a result of the Freedom Rise, how he and Vivian was in the same cell. And Vivian he had a great command of the English language, and he loved pie. He loved to play little word games with people. So Lafayette and Vivian, while they were in this jail cell in Mississippi, after they had gotten there and gotten arrested, they were playing these little pawns waiting for their appearance in court, right? Well, the jailer came and told them that, that it was time for them to go to court. And, so Vivian told the guy, well, we're doing pawns, so when we finish this pawn, we'll be ready to go. Well, of course, this deputy in Mississippi didn't know what the word pawn meant. He thought maybe it meant something. Who knows what he thought it meant? And so he was baffled by the term pawn and that these guys weren't in any hurry
to get to court because they could possibly be released once they went to court.
Wow.
So that tells you about the character of C.T. Vivian. He was a fearless man. He didn't fear anything. But
wow.
I went and spent time with him when his wife passed. I spent, and that may have been in 2014, I think. I had gone to the wake, and his family had come in, and he didn't come with them. And they told me that he didn't want to come out. He was going to come out the following day to the service. So I came back home, and I went in, knocked on the door. He came out, and we spent a couple of hours talking. And he told me that there was only one time in his life he had ever been afraid. And so that was following the time when he was punched by Sheriff Clark. Now, he went on to tell me that he wasn't supposed to lead that march, that he was supposed to have been in Montgomery or Atlanta. But Martin had this policy that if you were assigned to man an office somewhere in the South, you had to stay there until your relief came. And so Hosea Williams, another unsung hero from the civil rights movement, doesn't get a lot of credit for the thing that he did. He was on the bridge, in Selma, when Lewis got bludgeoned, got hit in the head, and Williams got hit in the head too, and almost died.
Wow.
Because the both of them were leading the march. Well, it was so Hosey was supposed to be in Selma to man that office, but he was running late for some reason. So Mrs. Amelia Boynton knocked on SCLC's door and said, and so Vivian was there. He answered, and she says, well, I'm taking this group of people down to the courthouse to register to vote, and we need you all to come and support us. So CT gets his hat. He gets his hat, and he's leading the march that he wasn't supposed to be in town to lead. So he gets punched, and he gets away. Beg your pardon?
He got caught up in it, but, you know, sorry for cutting you off. There is that crossroads that indoctrinates one into the movement. I noticed there's always that intersection, you know, C.T. Vivian getting in this march, you know, Megar Evers coming back from the war. He's traveled all over the world. He's went and fought for our freedom. So he thought when he got back here, he would be the man that he was out there. But when he got back here, they were still calling him an N-I-G-G-A, and he N-I-G-G-E-R back then. And he wasn't having it.
I'm losing you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. I can now, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, we are coming to the last few minutes of our segment. So we're going to take a quick break. It's about 2 minutes, and we're going to come back to, if you have another excerpt, I'd like you to read something for us.
Okay,
well, we're going to take a 2-minute break. We'll be right back live on Men and Women of Honor Radio on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul International Family Brand.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the corner.
Yes, Lord, yes, Lord, yes, Lord. Welcome right back live on Tri-Family Channels, Men and Women of Honor Radio. And it is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to come to you with my guest, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, honoring C.T. Vivian. Those were the words of the late, great Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Put them in your heart, place them in your trust, and believe that you must be a person of action if you want to reap the rewards. We are going to close, but not before my guest, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey, gives us some closing thoughts on C.T. Vivian, the great civil rights icon.
Thank you. I'm going to read a little short passage, and it's going to sum up King and Vivian, okay? And I'm going to start from, I'm talking about the day of the wake of his wife. On the day of her wake, I gathered at the funeral parlor with family and friends. Reverend Vivian decided he would stay home and rest while the family was out. So I took my leave from the wake and stopped by the Vivian residence and spent some personal time with my friend. He was glad to see me. We talked for a couple of hours before family members returned from the wake. Vivian told me about the time he was holed up in a cave in Northeast Africa full of rocks the Palestinians had stockpiled in the 13th century to repel Charlemagne. The same stones we see Palestinians on television hurling at the occupying army in their homeland. Vivian in that cave was waiting to rendezvous with Yasser Arafat, leader of the Radical Palestinian Liberation Organization, as a precursor to clear Ambassador Andrew Young from an allegation that he had breached protocol and met with the Palestinians. They never received the all-clear sign that it was safe to travel to meet Arafat. The meeting did not happen, and Young ultimately resigned his post at the United Nations. He returned to Atlanta and served two terms as mayor. Vivian said that there was a language barrier between him and the Palestinians assigned to escort him. So Vivian, a collector of rare books, spent several hours inside that cave wondering what the price of one of those 13th century stones would be on the open market if only he could bring one back home. Then, then Vivian thought about the time on November the 7th, 1967, when he and Martin were holed up in a hotel room in Cleveland, Ohio, waiting to be summoned by Carl Stokes to share the stage with him to celebrate Stokes' election as the first black mayor of Cleveland. That same night, Richard G. Hatcher was elected mayor of Gary, Indiana. Stokes and Hatcher were the first blacks elected mayor of a major northern city. Both elections bore witness to King's commitment to voting rights for Negroes in America. We waited and waited and we waited. The call never came. Around midnight, I told Martin Stokes was not going to call. Stokes was afraid Martin's presence would scare off his white supporters. Vivian recalled the sense impression he and King shared sitting in that hotel room. Such was the precarious nature of King's legacy 5 months before meeting Destiny on a Lorraine Motel balcony. He had secured the ballot for black people, and now that blacks in Cleveland had exercised that right and elected a black mayor, the mayor-elect was afraid to be seen on the same stage of the Voting Rights Act.
Oh, Lord, have a mercy. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do your history, not only will you find out, as so powerfully read from my C.T. Vivian story, a powerful flame that burned brightly by Mr. Harold Michael Harvey. But if you do your homework, you will learn that there were a lot of black people that didn't want Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to come to where they were. See, complacency, being comfortable with what you're being distributed and thrown, the little bits and bones and crumbs that they throw you will make you lose skull. It's not about you. It's about us. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was for all people, regardless of race, creed, or color. And there were three words that resonate as we go out on this show, men and women of honor. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, I am. Excuse me, four words. A man. I am a man.
Amen.
And I want to say that to all of you brothers out there, you are a man. And it's not about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. It's about exercising the God-given gifts and the strength and the power that was planted down inside of you from day one. You walk in your strength, you walk in your power, and best believe that the reason why we catch so much hell from resisting is because it is still legally in the books, in the laws today, that a nonviolent protest is an assault to white supremacy. Now, if you do your homework, you'll figure out why the Black Lives Matter movement and other marches and assemblies that can come together peacefully, why they would get attacked. It's on the books because your silent protest, your silent peaceful protest is an assault on white supremacy. That means you don't have to open your mouth. You can put a black piece of tape across your mouth and stand up there silently, and it will knock you across your head. So that's the fight that we're in. Gird up with the whole armor of God, ladies and gentlemen, because our democracy is under attack. So it's beyond being black. It's about being for democracy. And unless you want to live like these third world countries, you better open up your mind and your eyes so you can see. Those are my final words. Mr. Harvey Michael Harrell, thank you so much for being right here on Men and Women of Honor Radio. Any final words of wisdom for our listeners and where they can contact you?
Final words of wisdom, pick up a book and start reading. Get off the Internet. Get a book and read. Get my books and read, because they are literally packed full of information. And we talked about on this show, we talked about a method used to eliminate black leaders, and that is by physical assassination. But the other way they do it is they won't give your true leadership the airways. They won't put their books on the New York Times bestseller list. So you have to do it. You have to go ahead and read the people that you need to read in order to have the information that you need to have the best life possible in this country. So you can reach me at HaroldMichaelHarvey.com. My email address is hmharvey@haroldmichaelharvey.com. My website, haroldmichaelharvey.com. There's a whole rostrum of the five books that I have written on there. You can order them. I'll autograph and ship them to you the same day that that you make your order. At least they'll go out the next day. And, you know, pick up some of the stuff I read and read it. Pick up some of the stuff I write and read it, because you'll learn so much. My whole reason for being is to find is to take these little individual nuggets about our collective history. So if you can, you know, piece it all together, we can find our way down into the valley where the good living really is, and that's where we need to go. We don't need to stay on the mountaintop. My word of wisdom: get off the mountaintop and go down and scale down the other side of that mountain.
Well,
that's what you need to do.
I just want to really thank you so much for being our guest sponsor here tonight on Men and Women of Honor, honoring C.T. Vivian and discussing your book, My C.T. Vivian Story, A Powerful Flame That Burned Brightly, by Harold Michael Harvey, available at haroldmichaelharvey.com, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so very much once again for being our guest. You can listen to the archives of this show by following our studio at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. Gumbo for the Soul International, family brand created, owned, and operated by Beverly Black, yours truly, is the home of Tribe Family Channel, and we have a current call for submissions to honor men and women of honor, respectively. So please visit our website at www.gumbofortheSoul.com. I'm on all social media as Beverly Black, Tribe Family Channel at Gumbo for the Soul on Twitter, at Tribe Family US on Twitter also, LinkedIn, Beverly Black, Facebook, TribeFamilyChannel.com. There are a plethora of shows. We would be honored if we could book you on one of them. So be sure to tune in, follow me on social media, and stay abreast of all of our latest and greatest news. Thank you so much once again, Mr. Harold Michael Harvey. It's been an evening of great pleasure and enlightenment, and you have a blessed rest of your evening. Have an amazing week going forward. Be positive and stay blessed.
God bless you. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
This holiday season, show your loved ones how much Black Lives Matter. Give them the gifts that reveal the real history and culture of living black. Give them books that inspire, motivate, and inform.
Give the gift of the written words from the Living Now Bronze Medal winner, Harold Michael Harvey. Give them the Harold Michael Harvey Collection, which includes My C.T. Vivian Story, The Duke of 18th and Vine, Freaknik Lawyer, and Justice in the Round. Order some or the entire collection now to ensure delivery before the holidays at HaroldMichaelHarvey.com.
My knees.